Hey, it's Joey with Dismantle Podcast. Before we kick off this episode, we want to tell you about Patreon. Patreon is an online community where listeners and creators can connect. But it's more than just connection, it's community. With any monthly support, you can access things like upcoming guests, exclusive episodes, even behind-the-scenes content you won't find anywhere else. Podcasters aren't in it for the money, but to continue to get guests, record episodes, time to edit, and posting, all of that requires energy and funds. So if you like what you're hearing or you've shared any episodes with friends, consider becoming a patron of any amount by visiting patreon.com/dismantlepod.
Do I think that the little old lady living down the street with me or from me just wants to control me? No, right? Like, so yes, I understand that space there, that it's not necessarily about power and control for everyone. I think people are afraid of change.
Welcome to The Dismantle, creating community, not converts.
Hello and welcome to Dismantle Podcast, a place for community, not converts. I'm your host, Joey. On this show, we attempt to dismantle an issue that poses as problematic for the church by having a discussion with a guest who has insight or experience with that subject. As you know, we're not always going to agree, and that's okay, but we're not going to argue because our goal is to build bridges and not barriers. And our guest today is Rachel Spears. Rachel, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm glad we got to connect. Thanks for saying yes.
Absolutely. I love it.
So before we dive into our conversation today, Rachel, can you give our listeners a little bit about who you are, where you are, and some of the work you do?
Sure. My name is Rachel Spears. I live in the Midwest in Cincinnati, Ohio. I am actually professionally, I'm a part of the wedding industry, and I born and raised in the church. I was a worship leader for a very long time. And so now I also kind of facilitate some conversations around deconstruction and leaving the evangelical church on TikTok. And I have a podcast as well. So I spend most of my time talking about the church, unfortunately.
You're killing it. And I love your content personally.
Thank you.
You know, if our listeners are not familiar with it, go check it out. And we'll talk about all of that later. But thank you again for being on the show today. We are talking a little bit church related. Mm-hmm. And it's centered around a post that you had not too long ago. And I just found it fascinating. And then I had like 15 people send it to me. So I knew I had to follow up with it. But it's around this topic of church revival, but maybe not how we envision it or how we historically have envisioned it. So first of all, you know, you gave us a little bit about your story. Can you give us a little bit more about where you grew up? What sort of was your spiritual terrain? What was the environment like when you were coming up in faith?
Sure. I grew up fully immersed in the church. We were there when the doors were open every time, and everyone around us was as well. Back in that time, mega churches weren't really a thing. So in context of the other sizes of churches, I went to a mega church. Now it would not be considered that, but at the time it was a big church. It had a, for the time, famous pastor. Again, a lot of people now have never heard of him, but this was pre social media and the internet and all those things. And we had a huge bus ministry, and they had a radio show and a TV show. Like, it was pretty big, and everyone was there any and every time that we could be. And my friends were only church people, and my parents' friends were only church people. I ended up in high school going to the high school at that church, like just fully, fully immersed. It was a Baptist church, not Southern Baptist. It was independent, but also not like an independent fundamental Baptist church either. It was just kind of on its own. I think it was out of Baptist Bible Fellowship in Missouri, but it was just my entire life, for almost my entire life, has been completely immersed in the church. And when I was a kid, it was rigid and structured. That church was very much, you know, everyone was in their Sunday best all the time. There wasn't a lot of like, expressive worship, you know. It was very reverent, fire and brimstone kind of thing. So that's what I grew up with.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Now, that being the case, it sounds like there has been a journey within that. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us a little bit about your deconstruction? What were some of the things that triggered it? And, you know, how's that been going for you?
Well, it's a journey. And I think this resonates with a lot of people that a lot of us were deconstructing before we knew what deconstructing was.
Yeah.
We knew what we were feeling unsettled in a lot of things, but nobody had put a name to it. And so just last night I mentioned to someone, I think that I've actually been deconstructing for much longer than it might appear because I was struggling with these things. I grew up in that church, went to that Christian school in high school, graduated, and I went to Liberty University. And that is a big part of my platform now, is talking about Liberty University. And I don't always talk about it in the nicest way. And that is part of my platform, I think, because I realized in later years, kind of what was damaging about all of that, that Christian culture that fully immerses you. And you align with what they say and do, or else, is the kind of church I grew up in, and definitely kind of the temperature in the room at Liberty and with the religious right, obviously with Jerry Falwell running Liberty University and starting the religious right. I saw my entire life where my church life was attached to my political opinions and the way that I viewed society and people in our country. And as I kind of got older and my opinion started to change maybe on things that were political or just social, I saw how they were so tied to what I had been raised in the church, and just kind of as a domino effect, I think it started with politics and some social issues. And it just kind of finally got to where I was face to face with figuring out what my faith actually was.
And now, to the post that you had in question, there was something around, something we've all heard all our lives, especially growing up within the church, is that revival is coming. Mm-hmm. We sort of look back in history and we think about George Whitefield and others with these great revivals within the country of the United States. And the older generation is always praying for the younger generation. It's just what it is, right? They're always asking for us to rise up to. And I say us. I'm not the young generation anymore. But,
I wish I was, but
right. Like that's not me anymore. But they're always asking for revival to occur. Can you unpack some of that?
Yeah, I think that I don't even know when I was a kid maybe what I thought they were talking about. I think, if you had asked me back then, I would say, just people coming to Jesus. You know, when we had revivals at church, we would have like a week in the fall and a week in the spring. It was just like five straight days of church services. And it was like just getting people to accept Jesus as their savior. And that's what I viewed revival as. And so when I would hear these preachers yelling that about revival, I always viewed it as they want us to lead other people to Jesus. As I got older, I feel like I maybe heard it a little differently, like of the country coming back to Jesus. That was something that all of a sudden it was bringing America back to Jesus. Maybe that was, you know, maybe that's what they were saying when I was younger too, but I heard it differently the older I got, that they wanted the country of America to just come back to Jesus. And I saw that as maybe more of things like political policy and what was allowed or permitted and what wasn't, and a church not being soft on scripture, right? That's something that they like to say, you know, you go soft on it. And that's what I've always envisioned them saying they wanted for revival. They wanted us to come back to Jesus, the country to come back to Jesus, the church to come back to Jesus. We all are in this season. If we're deconstructing, a lot of us, some people deconstruct all the way away from their faith. And there's room for that. And I have respect for those people. There's people like me who are deconstructing because we love Jesus so much and we were trying to cling to that faith. And so when I made that video, I can't remember exactly what had frustrated me that day, but I was thinking to myself that day, I have come back to Jesus. I left the church to come back to Jesus in the cross and the gospel. And this is what I thought they said they wanted me to do, but they're criticizing it at every turn.
Yeah, and that's such an interesting point about what you heard versus what was meant.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that happens a lot, where it's sort of a caught thing and not a taught thing, where our definitions are not very specific, and so we ran into five different directions because of what we heard, but not necessarily what was meant?
Yeah, for sure. Especially with something like that, like a term like revival, because even within the American church, you're going to look at different denominations that would see that as something very different. Right. And so I don't know exactly the words they put to it when I was young. I just remember feeling like, at least in my Baptist church, where unfortunately, like, Christian nationalism is something I've learned through deconstruction that I was a part of for my entire life, especially with a pastor that I had growing up who was very well connected to a lot of politicians. And then being at Liberty with Dr. Falwell, who's very connected to politicians, I've learned through my deconstruction that my personal journey has looked a lot like Christian nationalism. And so that's why I go back and I hear America come back to Jesus, America come back to Jesus, which might not have been everyone else's experience.
Yeah. And so for the sake of this conversation, when we do say revival, mm-hmm. when you're talking about it, what exactly do you mean? Is it less of that political affiliation and more about the personal spirituality, or is there something else?
Like, for what I would want in revival?
Yeah, if you were going to say, hey, we need revival, what does that mean for you?
I would say Jesus. And so in essence, it's almost like we were saying the same thing, but like you just said, caught versus taught, of what was actually being said to us back then. Right now, what I want for people is who are still maintaining their Christian faith is to just come back to Jesus. Like, take away. It's not about adding. They like to say, you know, like, we're adding to the scripture or whatever. That's not what I'm doing. I'm actually just trying to take away all of the nonsense, like take away the nationalism, take away all of the other isms and the things that we've added to the church. And even within just the church, different church politics, right? Like, we all know how that goes too. Denominations, I understand people are going to have different belief systems, but it's become this thing with conventions and meetings and all of this. And I'm like, just come back to Jesus. Like, at the end of the day, that is our faith, or that's what we say our faith is. And so if I'm coming back to, I'm taking away all of the distractions and I'm coming back to the life and teachings of Jesus, his death and resurrection, like, that's my call to revival. And that is what I think a lot of people, not all, but a lot of people who are quote unquote deconstructing are doing. And that is my frustration with the video that I made, was that is what a lot of us are doing. And they're really mad about it.
Yeah, it's such an interesting juxtaposition, and that's originally what caught my attention, is that you've been asking for revival, and the proverbial you, not you exactly, but you asked for revival, and that's exactly what's happening, and you're not happy about it.
Yeah.
And it does sort of parallel a lot of the Pharisaical examples that we see within the narrative of Scripture, where, you know, Jesus is saying, look, you asked for this thing, and now it's in front of you, and you can't even recognize it.
Right. And I don't know if that's a pride thing, if it's a comfort. I don't really know. It's hard for me. And conversation is obviously always going to be the best thing for us to have. And I would love to have some conversations with the older generation that I mentioned. And that's, you know, that's not necessarily like a certain, I'm not saying 70 and over or anything like that. I just mean the people that came before us. And one of that, like, what is it that we're doing that you find so heretical? Because I'm looking at you and I'm trying to tell you, I still love Jesus madly, and I'm still trying to follow after his teachings. And you are having whole podcasts around what we're doing wrong. And you're having these symposiums and things. And I'm like, are you talking to us? Like, ask us what we're really doing, and maybe we could all find some common ground.
And so, what is the terrain of the church that you're seeing? What is happening right now that is, for lack of a better term, prophetic? What was asked for, and what is actually coming through with these deconstruction accounts and people like yourself and myself who are walking through trying to get back to Jesus? What is happening to the church because of that?
Well, I think that what's important to maybe specify there is big C church versus little C church. Right. You know, are we talking about the body of Christ or the American evangelical church? Because that is a separation that I know I try to make all the time, and other deconstruction creators as well try to distinguish that. Like, I want to be part of the church. I am part of the bride of Christ, and I have respect and love for that. The American Evangelical Church is another story for me. And I think that Americans tend to think we're the main character in everything anyway. That's definitely a character flaw of ours. And so the American Evangelical Church, it's hard sometimes, and I know this because I was part of it, right? Like, I'm preaching to the choir here of a former version of Rachel, that we were like the sum of it. Everyone else was doing something wrong, right? Like, we were the crown of creation in that, like, this is what the church is supposed to be. And I see that they're so convinced of the same thing that I used to be convinced of. And so anyone doing anything different is wrong. But in reality, there are a lot of us in the Big C Church who are reinventing and reimagining our faith in a really beautiful way. And that revival is happening. People are coming back to Christ. People are like refinding their faith. I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but refinding their faith, reclaiming their faith outside of the American Evangelical Church. And what I'm seeing then is the American Evangelical Church doesn't know how to handle that.
Fear of like what are we afraid of, right? Is it just control? Is it just power? Or is there something underneath it? Because I think, you know, just to give a little pushback, not that you're saying this, but I think that that's a cop-out at times to just say, well, it's all about power, it's all about control. Yes, that's in there, but you know, is there something deeper than just being able to tell other people what to do with their lives in a spiritual authoritative way?
Well, yeah, I think that there is definitely an element of power and control, and that the big wigs, you know, of the American Evangelical Church, like that I mentioned earlier, that would have connection to politics and power and stuff. Yes, I think that there's an element of that in there. Do I think that the little old lady living down the street with me or from me just wants to control me? No, right? Like, so yes, I understand that space there, that it's not necessarily about power and control for everyone. I think people are afraid of change, and tradition is very important in the church. And when somebody comes in and they try to, you know, push against maybe what we've always accepted as truth or the way we do things, we are, and I say we collectively because I don't handle change well either, we are kind of programmed to say, hands up, wait a minute. Like, let's look at this. Are you doing things right? Because we've done it this way forever and it's worked. So yes, there's definitely an element of power and control, but I don't think it's all that. I think it is fear of something different. And honestly, I think something I had to process myself is a fear that maybe you've been wrong about things. And we don't really like to look at ourselves that way. I know I don't. To say I was probably not right about a whole lot of things, and it's a hard thing to look at yourself and figure that out and admit that.
Yeah. And have you had a lot of pushback from those little old ladies? You know, like is the church pushing back on things that you're saying, the way that you see things? You know, is there a lot of opposition towards what you're doing and the way you're seeing things, the voice that you're crafting? Or are people just sort of writing you off and saying, well, good for her, she's found what works for her?
Well, I think I live in a pretty consistent pushback every day of my life these days. That's a social media aspect of it. The people in my like real life, people are talking about me a little bit and it gets back to me. I'm not having a whole lot of conversations like in person. I will have a conversation with one of my friends who talked to so-and-so that we used to go to church with, and they have stumbled upon my podcast and oh my gosh, they can't believe it, right? But when it comes to my platform online, it's every day, all day, pushback, all day. Every day. I get called just about every name that you can imagine that is some synonym for heretic, and just get challenged all the time. And sometimes it's by people who have the same education I do, and they just genuinely think that I'm wrong about it. Like that we've studied the same thing and they think I'm wrong, and that's fine. There are places for those conversations. Then there's sometimes people that are just like, you don't know what you're talking about. You're going to burn in hell. Have a great day. We get those a lot.
Which is exactly what Jesus would have done.
Absolutely.
But, you know, you point out something very interesting too. Like, is it just the the fear of hell. Like, you know, if you really boil it down and we do this mental experiment for a second. Hey, I think you're wrong. Okay, why? Well, because the Bible's clear. Okay, what if the Bible's not clear? Mm-hmm. Well, then maybe you believe the wrong things. Okay, if I believe the wrong things, well, then what? Well, then you go to hell. You know, we sort of put this emphasis on the eternal destination. And, you know, to be fair, maybe that does play in a great deal for some people. Does that play the same way for you now the way that it did?
I have come in the last 6 months. I've probably done more undoing in my doctrinal positions in the last 6 months of my life than I'd ever done, even through several years of deconstruction. And I think that that is where I was caught in this tension the first few years of my deconstruction, because I hadn't settled on a lot of what I believed doctrinally. And so there was just a lot of emotions, right, attached to it. It was just some pain and church trauma, you know, maybe not thinking that these people were as bad as I'd always been taught they were. And I was like living in this tension. And also, and I touched on that, I went to Liberty obviously a couple of times, but I studied philosophy and I studied religion. So I was in the School of Divinity. And so I took Greek and Hebrew and I studied hermeneutics. And so I also had this coming into it. And I like to look at things scholarly. And so I was just doing this like deep dive finally into doctrine and realizing what you just said. At the end of it is a fear of hell for ourselves and for others, that we think if we're wrong about these things, that it results in eternal torment. When you remove that, and that's, everyone's not going to do that. I have personally in the last 6 months, that's kind of where I've landed, is that I don't believe that that is the result. When you remove that, it changes how you view not only your own faith in Jesus, but every person that you encounter, because I'm not worried about telling them that they're going to burn in hell if they disagree with me. And so when people tell me that, it doesn't affect me the same way it did a couple of years ago when I started my deconstruction. And I was like, oh my gosh, if they're right and I'm wrong, I'm screwed. Like that is gone now for me. Yeah.
So now, how does the younger and the older, the conservative and the liberal, mm-hmm. the male and the female, you know, the people who are on totally opposite sides of the spectrum with most of the stuff that we're seeing, politics, spirituality, gender, you know, all this stuff we're just so divided over. For somebody who wants to come back to Jesus like yourself, the simplicity of that gospel, how do people then walk in unity? How do we focus on being together, even though our theology, our doctrine, our worldviews are diametrically opposed?
I think I've also changed my opinion a little bit on what walking in unity looks like. I think growing up in the church, at least for me, the goal, after maybe something happened and there was division, that the goal was always reuniting and carrying on going forward together. And I've kind of reevaluated that not everyone needs to walk this journey with me. So in unity of not having a crazy division where everyone hates each other, yes, I'm all for that. Obviously, I think that that's always the goal, is we don't need to just all hate each other for having all these different opinions. But moving forward in unity doesn't have to necessarily mean moving forward together. That is where maybe, you know, you get the denominational differences and those things, and the church is going to look different, how we all worship together and go forward. My encouragement in how we can at least be in the kind of unity where we don't just hate each other is something I keep reminding myself. This is like my mantra now, is to look at everyone around me and remember that they are image bearers of God. That is a term I use very frequently on all of my platforms. All of my listeners are very, very used to hearing that term, that if we view people, every single person, as being an image bearer of God, it makes me take pause before I say something horrible to them. It makes me take pause before I decide that they are bad, that they are wrong, that they are not worth redemption. All of the things that we've all thought at different parts in our lives about people or people groups, I remind myself that these are people who were created with intention and who are image bearers of God. And I find unity with them in that moment, even if just in my heart's position of how I talk about them or treat them or speak to them.
It's powerful.
It's really been life-changing. I know that makes me sound like some like motivational speaker for a second, and I'm definitely not. And I am a little petty and a little snarky for sure. Everyone that knows me knows that, but it has changed. It's changed my life because I never struggled so much with looking at people groups and not having respect and love for them. I had trouble looking at specific people that had hurt me or who pushed back against me, and church leaders and different, especially as I was deconstructing some church trauma that I went through. Those were the people that it was hard for me to remind myself were made in the image of God. And so when I look at them that way, it's really just changed my life.
And I think that's so beautifully said right there. It's not necessarily the foreigner and the LGBTQ community. Mm-hmm. I feel like we've got that down.
Yeah.
Or we're getting better at it, at least. It's people in the environments where we came from,
yes,
that hurt us, that continue to mock us, that don't understand the spiritual journey, that we need to remember are still image bearers of the divine. That's really powerful.
Yeah, I try all the time to say, you know, in this deconstruction community, or at least the ones I'm involved in, if we start looking like the church that we left, I'm out. Because that's what I was not necessarily leaving people, because I love a lot of the people that I spent my whole life with. I was leaving an institution and a structure that was harmful. And so if we get into just deconstruction circles or ex-evangelical or whatever anybody calls it, and all of a sudden it gets on semantics arguments and this person isn't okay and this person, then we're just doing the exact thing we tried to walk away from. And that includes for me looking at the people still part of the evangelical church and being ugly to them. I won't do it.
That's so good, Rachel. Well, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. Tell us a little bit about the podcast and where we can find you online.
So my podcast is called The Recovering Evangelical, and it streams everywhere you can find podcasts. We are getting ready to finish our second season, so it's fairly new, but the first two seasons have gone wonderfully. And all of this came from a platform I never thought I would fall into on TikTok. So you can find me on TikTok. It's such a long screen name. I did it before I knew I was going to blow up, and now I can't change it. It is at You Know That One Girl Rachel. If you go to therecoveringevangelical.com, you can find it directly from there and the Instagram and stuff. But the podcast is called The Recovering Evangelical.
Awesome. We'll throw it all in the show notes. But again, Rachel, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
And that wraps up this episode of Dismantle Podcast. Until next time, don't complain about the things you're not willing to change.